Hello, I am here in Deauville with film director Christy Hall, and we are going to talk about her debut film, Daddy-O, that is in competition here at the 50th Deauville American Film Festival. Welcome to France, welcome to Deauville, and thank you for being with us today. So with this film, we think we're going to embark on a journey through or to New York City, but instead we embark on a journey within the meeting of two strangers inside a car. Was it your intention to leave the city outside almost to the imagination, where so many filmmakers have a tendency to flaunt it?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Yeah, you know, I think for a film like this, I wanted to be confident in the choices and the decisions. And I think you're right. I think that the impulse would be to rely too heavily on the visuals, the scope, the expansion, even with the score, just cover it with, smother it with music. And but I didn't want to feel like I was apologizing for its containment. I wanted to really embrace the containment because I think that's what makes this piece really special.
Yeah, definitely. And you come from the theater, and this was originally a play. So what were the main challenges to turn it into a film, to adapt it for the screen?
So it was originally formatted as a play, but it never actually got to be produced on stage. So this is an original screenplay that for a time was written as a play, but never got its day in court. Okay. So honestly, I think the challenges were minimized because I didn't have it seared in my brain any specific way. And in fact, now that it's become a film, I still think it could do well on stage, but I think that it's best served in the cinematic language.
Yes.
Because you can really be in the cab with them. You can have that really claustrophobic nature. We can eavesdrop on the phone. And then just the beauty of New York City can be an additional character in and of its own right. But I will say this piece is very challenging in its simplicity because, you know, from 10,000 feet, you think, oh, they're just in one location. It's going to be easy. But it actually was extremely difficult in terms of how we could pull it off. And so we really had to rely on that very indie spirit. This is a very indie film. And so we had to be very flexible and nimble in terms of how we were going to actually pull it off.
Mm-hmm. So you only have two actors in your film, but what actors?
That's
no
true.
Less than Dakota Johnson and Sean Penn. So how did you approach them and how did you work with them? Did you develop it with them?
A lot of times really small independent films don't have a casting director. It's very organic how a cast ends up becoming attached. So I just wrote this story just simply from inspiration, and I didn't have anyone specifically in mind. I just kind of wrote, I had the characters in my mind. And how it all came about was I made a TV show for Netflix called I'm Not Okay With This. And one of the executives on the Netflix side, her name is Ro Donnelly. She and I made a TV show together. And then she left Netflix to become Dakota Johnson's producing partner. Their production company is called Tea Time. And Ro and I are friends. We'd already made something together, and she had read Daddy-O as kind of my audition piece to get the I'm Not Okay With This job, the TV job. So she just said, what's going on with Daddy-O? Like, what do you think about Dakota for the woman in the back seat? And I said, are you kidding me? I would be so lucky. And so she said, I'm gonna send it to her. And Dakota read right away and said, not only would I love to play the role, but I would love for Ro and I to come on board and to join you. I'm also a producer on the film, and I had Emma Tillinger-Koskoff also attached, incredible producer. She produced The Irishman and the first Joker in the same year and was touted producer of the year as a result. So Emma and I were already producing the film. And then Dakota said, Ro and I would love to join you in the producing pool. So we four ladies surrounded this project. And then it was Dakota, to her credit, said, what do you think about my dear old friend, Mr. Sean Penn? And I said, again, I said, are you kidding me? We'd be so lucky. And she said, he and I are neighbors. They both live in Malibu. They're friends. They've been wanting to work together for many years. And she said, if I bring him the script, he'll read it right away. I can't promise he'll do it, but he'll read it. And Sean very famously doesn't even really have an email. He's very old school, which is so perfect for this character. Yes, she actually did. She printed off the script. She walked to his house. She knocked on the door. She hand delivered, this stack of paper.
That'll get his attention.
Yes, exactly. And you know, he read it, and within 48 hours, I was on a Zoom with him. And he was very complimentary, because he comes from the theater space. And he said, Christy, he said, I'm a theater kid. But he said, I haven't done theater in a long time. But he said, reading your script made me want to be on stage again. Mm-hmm. And he said, if you'll have me, I would love to do this. And that's how that all came about.
Wow. So lucky.
I know. I'm very, believe me, I never had the audacity to believe that because this is my directorial debut. I just never imagined that I would ever be able to secure a cast like this. And so I owe Dakota and Sean a lot for them believing in me. They never questioned me directing it. They never treated me like a first-time director. It's been an incredible experience all around.
Wow. So through Sean Penn's character, your film praises real human connection, mm-hmm. without screens, without filters, and even at some point without the glass window between them. So why was it so important for you to convey that message?
I think we're in a really interesting time in society at large. And you can see this globally. I don't know if it's because of social media. You know, children are now being raised with basically a small computer in their pocket. I did not grow up with a computer in my pocket. I'm from a generation where during the summer, I would ride my bike with my friends. And I grew up in a very small town in the Midwest of the United States. And I would tell my mom, I'm hanging out with Vanessa today, and I would jump on my bike and I'd be gone all day. And she had no idea where I was or what I was doing, but just trusted that I wouldn't, she trusted my integrity and my character and that I would come home in one piece. But growing up, I was really expected to learn how to talk to my peers. I was expected to be able to talk to adults. The art of conversation, the art of discourse, holding a conversation with someone who maybe doesn't agree with you. I feel like through the internet, we have created these echo chambers of homogenized thought. And we are creating, I think, a very immature society where we are very uncomfortable speaking to anyone who does not see the world exactly the way that we do. Because we've learned to either troll people through hate and violence, mm-hmm. and scream at them and threaten them if they don't see the world the same way we do. And then also if someone dares to challenge us in our little echo chambers, we tell them to go kill themselves and we block them. And I just feel like it's very dangerous. It's making us extremely volatile as a global community. And so, you know, this film is very unapologetically multi-generational. These are two very unlikely people that would ever necessarily be friendly.
Connect, yeah.
That's right. And I guess when two people choose to co-create a space of non-judgment, even though the conversation can be challenging at times, I'm daring to question that it's through that challenge, it's through that friction that our real humanity is exposed And I do believe that if you talk to someone long enough, they will inevitably unveil, again, they're going to, they will reflect your own humanity back at you. And it is an incredible reminder that I do believe that I celebrate our differences culturally and beyond. But I also believe that we are, you know, Homo sapiens live on this tiny little blue planet in the middle of nowhere. And I do believe that we're ultimately more alike than we are different. And I do think it's through real discourse and conversation that we are reminded by that. And, it, you know, it's like we don't have to change each other's minds. But like, what happened to the days that we could just talk to someone that could open our point of view and create new pathways in our brain and make us see the world differently? Even here, I'm visiting France and things are done differently here, and how beautiful, how wonderful. And it's challenging me in ways that will make me a better person.
Yeah, if you embrace it.
If you embrace it. And I think this film is attempting to dare to ask, what are we losing when we bury ourselves in our phones and we refuse to talk to the person driving us, to talk to the person sitting next to us on the train, the person that we're ordering our baguette from? What are we losing? I think we're losing something that's extremely important to, like, the DNA of who we are.
So you seem to depict men a little harshly at first, whether it is through the text that she receives or the driver's sort of cold, crude speech about women. But they both come around and redeem themselves in a way. Did you mean to shed a warmer light on men at a time when they are under a lot of scrutiny?
That's a beautiful question. Yes, I think it's interesting to flirt with the audience a little bit. So at first, I liked the idea of setting up what might feel like a stereotype at first. The man on the phone. Actually, let's start with the man on the phone. I start with him in what I call caveman brain.
So I was outraged.
He has one thing on his mind. He is hyper-focused on getting that one thing. I start him in caveman brain, and I allow the audience to judge her for it. I allow the audience to think, sweetheart,
why are you
wasting your time? What are you doing? I allow the audience to judge her, because all we see is this one side of him. As the film goes on, and I don't want to give anything away, but we do start to see the softer sides of their relationship. We do see the ways that he has allowed her into his inner world, in the ways that he is vulnerable with her, and the ways that she's very vulnerable with him, that there actually is an intimacy between the two of them that I want the audience to then question our prejudgments. In the same way for Sean's character, I allow him to be the walking New York native stereotype, which, by the way, exists. I find his character to be very authentic to the realities of New York. This, you know, he is from a very specific generation. He was taught to talk about women a certain way. This man has a very tough exterior. And like most tried and true New Yorkers, he wears it like a badge of honor to tell you like it is, or at least the way he sees it. And I allow the audience to judge him. Slowly but surely, because she does not cut him off, because she saves space for him, and because she continues to remain in the conversation, which, by the way, female empowerment can look a lot of different ways. A woman has every right to cut off a conversation, but a woman has every right to stay in a conversation if she wants to,
and dig deeper
if she feels like there's something there for her. And I'm a lot like her in that way. I like, and maybe it's because I'm a storyteller, I like to remain in conversations, especially when they get very challenging. I like to continue to ask why. I'm not one to tell someone to go screw themselves and just put in my headphones and decide to bury my head. Like, I'm very curious about the world. But I allow the audience to judge him. And slowly but surely, he starts to reveal that there is a tenderness to him. This man, had he been born of any other generation to any other time and born in of any other place, he might have been taught to show up differently. And I think we get to see, you know what I like about it? I think they change each other. I think that he is going to actually talk about women differently. I think he's going to talk about his wife differently after engaging with this beautiful person. And I guess the you know, the dramatic question then becomes, yes, what are all of our prejudgments of each other? Are we too quick to judge a book by its cover? And what is all the beautiful information that we're missing about someone because we actually didn't take the time to continue to engage with them?
So how does it feel to be presenting your film, your feature film, here in Deauville in competition at the American Film Festival?
It is a privilege and it is an honor to be here, truly. This is, like I said, this is a very indie movie. We had a very small budget and we shot this film in 16 days. As a first-time filmmaker, the fact that it even got made, the fact that I was allowed to direct it, the fact that it got distribution, and the fact that it has any support at all, particularly by this incredibly celebrated festival, it's a dream come true. And I'm just so excited to share the film tonight. And I hope to, if I've ever allowed to direct again, I hope to bring another film here because I'm having a wonderful time.
Oh, I am sure you will.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, thank you so much for your time and congratulations again on such a beautiful, heartfelt film. And yeah, I wish you the best for the screening and can't wait to see it in theaters in France.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I enjoyed my time today.
You're welcome.